We welcome you in on this Wednesday afternoon to 49ers Live. I'm Joe Fan. I was looking for Matt Maiocco. Instead, this bearded gentleman joined me. The show will go on all the same. Are the beard jokes getting old yet, Matt?
No.
I'm just getting started.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I hope you have better lines than that one.
Probably not. Probably
no,
not.
Surprisingly a positive reaction.
The caveman look suits you well.
Well, I don't know about that, but I've kept that door open where, you know, is this just the camp look or is it the regular season look? So, you know, like a team trying to trim its 90-man roster down to 53, I'm deciding whether I should trim my beard at the end of training camp as well.
What an analogy that was.
Yeah.
It was just a clear connection there. Yeah. Foolproof logic. And we digress into training camp, which is what you're here for. We're about five practices in now, three padded sessions. Before we get into a deep dive of all the top storylines, let's check out the top five plays thus far. We start with an honorable mention, and Aldrick Robinson, a fantastic day on Monday. A couple of long scores, this in the one-on-one portion. A guy that Kyle Shanahan brought over from Atlanta and feels confident in.
You know the thing about Aldrick Robinson? He could have put the Super Bowl away. But the running back missed the block, the sack fumble. Aldrick Robinson was running all alone down the middle of the field. It would have been a game-clinching, Super Bowl-clinching touchdown. But instead, something happened to the Falcons that people here don't really like to talk about.
And we move on to number five, and that's Bruce Ellington. A one-handed catch from Bruce Ellington. Good to see him healthy.
Yes, and that's the question about him. If he can stay healthy, he's a playmaker. He has a chance to help out on special teams and as a slot receiver, but there's a lot of competition in that slot spot as well.
And he was the best player in camp last year. Again, just couldn't stay healthy. Good to see number 10 back on the field. Number four, George Kittle, a rookie tight end, making a name for himself during OTAs and minicamp. It's continued in training camp. Nice diving, full extension grab.
Yeah.
Got his forearms underneath that completed catch.
I think so. Yeah, no, Kittle comes in with a chance to be a major contributor year one. Good competition at the tight end spot, and he certainly factors into it.
Number three, the 49ers top wide receiver, that's Pierre Garçon. The 2-15 connection has been consistent. We're getting ahead of ourselves there. Reuben Foster, a little teaser alert. We're jumping ahead to number two. Why not? Reuben Foster, three picks in camp so far. He's been fantastic.
He has been, and as Kyle Shanahan said, you know, the other day, the adjustment he made, getting burned on a play one day, and then the next day coming back, making the adjustment, and being in the passing lane to pick off that ball. So Reuben Foster showing some playmaking ability on the practice field.
And number one is Marquise Goodwin, who has just been fantastic. I think he's my surprise of camp so far because you expect the big plays, but I don't really think I expected the volume of them.
Yeah, he's a guy. I talked to him right before the offseason program broke. And, you know, everybody knows long jump, Olympics. He's a very detail-oriented guy, and that's what he likes about Kyle Shanahan's offense is that, you know, it's a very detailed offense. And he likened it to the long jump. He knows exactly how many steps he has to take to hit that board. He also knows how many steps he takes on any particular pass route. He has a chance. He's going to have his breakout season. It's just a matter of how good he is this season.
The Taylor Gabriel comparisons have been in full force since he joined the 49ers. Let's go back to number three, if we have it. I know we jumped over it, but Pierre Garçon, the 2-15 connection, it looks like the rapport and chemistry between Brian Hoyer and Pierre Garçon has been fantastic. Throughout camp, several plays each day. This one, putting his faith in his receiver. And Pierre Garçon, he's been really consistent so far through camp.
He has been. And, you know, he's Anquan Boldin is kind of like him. You know, if people will remember, obviously, Anquan Boldin. But what Pierre Garçon does, he also separates. You know, so he still has a little life in those legs. And they're, you know, a good competition against Rashard Robinson and not giving up on the ball, the good concentration that you talked about. Right now, you know, when you look at the 49ers passing game, it's Pierre Garçon and Marquise Goodwin. Those two guys have really separated themselves, and now it's a matter of, you know, which of the other guys will kind of join in and be part of that passing offense.
I'm curious what your take is on the offense as a whole, because when I think back to last year, and I know you never want to look backwards, especially with a new regime, but I know we were out there on the sideline. begging for a vertical ball, begging just to take a shot. And we see consistently, and it's not just Marquise Goodwin. It's Aldrick Robinson. DeAndre Smelter has made some plays. Victor Bolden Jr. and Kendrick Bourne, a couple of undrafted guys, have made plays. And so the volume of big plays in the passing game, I just don't think we saw that last year. And you're seeing so much of it. I don't know if it's Kyle Shanahan. I don't know if it's the players. I don't know if it's Brian Hoyer. But as a whole, as a collective, it's been very impressive to watch.
Yeah, when I first started, you know, researching Kyle Shanahan and went to the Super Bowl and talked to some of his offensive coaches with the Falcons, the one thing that everybody talked about was how he loves the running game. He loves the running game, but he loves the running game to also do play action and set up the deep ball. And so he's using the running game not just to set up the passing game, but to set up the home run. I mean, he wants to strike deep. So that's what you're seeing. So to me, the biggest question mark is, will the offensive line, or let's just say, will the pass protection give Brian Hoyer and Kyle Shanahan enough time to be able to hit that deep ball? You know, because some of those plays are kind of slow developing. You have to really have them bite on the run. If they don't bite fully on the run, you're talking about the opposing pass rush, now will Brian Hoyer, you know, be taking 12-yard sacks? Or will he be unloading the ball deep down the field to guys like Marquise Goodwin?
If you have any questions, be sure to send them in. We've got a couple trickling in as well. We'll get those to Senor Mayoko here in just a second. As we continue on the offensive side of the football, looking at the personnel there, Brian Hoyer carrying himself like he's leader of the offense. Obviously, it's a new situation for him. That's not a new experience for him. He's done it with a number of different teams, but the security of having that starting job, he is the presumed starter, and I think he's carried himself that way. And again, you talk about consistency. I've seen a lot from Brian Hoyer. There's just 1 week.
Yeah, no, I have too. I mean, I can't say anything negative about Brian Hoyer. You know, I know fans around the league. I just did a Facebook live chat, and people are still going, "Hey, who's the starting quarterback?" Like, it's
there is no competition.
There is
make
no
that very clear.
There is no
Brian
competition.
Hoyer is the starting quarterback.
And you know, am I going to say Pro Bowl for Brian Hoyer? Probably not. But I think Brian Hoyer, I think a lot of people are underestimating Brian Hoyer. The biggest knock on him is that he hasn't been able to stay healthy.
Yep.
And so this is the first time, I think, that he's come into a situation as the starting quarterback. And so in the offseason, he acted like a starting quarterback. You know, his leadership, you know, his you know, the Camp Hoyer in Dallas, it all kind of speaks to him kind of taking that mantle as a starting quarterback and running with it. And from what I gather, every place he's been, you know, teammates have liked him. He's been a well-liked guy.
You heard Joe Staley say maybe the most competitive guy he's ever been around.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so guys like him, and he can be a legitimate starting quarterback in this league if he can stay healthy, because I think, you know, this offense works for him. Quarterbacks love to play in this offense. And, he has a chance to have a really good season.
I think you have to look just back to last year. Five starts, all five of them 300-yard passing games. I don't know if Alshon Jeffrey played in a single one of them with Chicago Bears. That's impressive.
Yeah.
No matter way you slice it.
When you look at it, you know, people, and I say this too, is that, you know, they really didn't make a commitment this offseason to a franchise long-term starting quarterback for the 49ers. But when you look at, and a lot can happen in a year, and I, this is talking about 2018, the first guy who gets an opportunity to show what he can do and be the future of the 49ers at quarterback is Brian Hoyer. You know, all the other guys we could talk about who are whatever on other teams' rosters or in the college ranks, the first guy who can just put his foot down and say, this is my job, not only for 2017, but for 2018 and beyond, that's Brian Hoyer.
And I will say I appreciate Brian Hoyer's approach to this as well, knowing that he's not looking beyond 2017. The opportunity before him is one that he hopes to take advantage of. With the running backs, let's finish up on this the offensive side of the football. Everyone with the draft pick of Joe Williams and the Matt Breda hype and the trade for Capri Bibbs and the signing of Tim Hightower, people are so quick to write off Carlos Hyde. He showed today, okay, I'm still a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, and I think he's had a pretty good camp. But yeah, you're right. I mean, with Joe Williams coming in and you know, reading the Peter King article behind the scenes of the draft, how much Kyle Shanahan wanted Joe Williams and how much Bobby Turner wanted Joe Williams, that tells you what the future is for Joe Williams, at least how it was projected on draft day. But let's not forget, Carlos Hyde is still one of the better running backs in the NFL. And there are a lot of teams that would love to have Carlos Hyde on their team. He looks to be in better shape. He's catching the ball out of the backfield better, I think, or putting more of an emphasis on catching the ball out of the backfield. And today, during a move the chains period, toward the end of practice, you know, he got a steady dose of carries, as did Tim Hightower, who, by the way, also looks pretty good. But at the goal line on a six-yard run, these are not tackling drills.
Thud up.
They're thud. Yeah, just hit, wrap, whatever. He caught a rookie cornerback, Akello Witherspoon, kind of flat-footed, knowing that he couldn't, you know, go low and tackle Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde absolutely trucked him. Just really demolished him. And so Carlos Hyde, I don't know if he's feeling a little frustration or, hey, I've been the starter here. You know, this is my job. I want to solidify it. But kind of looked like he put a little oomph into that. And this is a guy who doesn't run away from tackle. He doesn't run out of bounds. He doesn't dive on the ground. He's always not. He's never shying away from contact. Well, he certainly didn't do that with with Witherspoon either.
I feel like these practices as a whole have been very physical, very competitive. I think there was something I saw yesterday where Carlos Hyde kind of lowers a shoulder or a forearm into Dante Johnson downfield. I don't think Dante Johnson really took kindly to it.
No.
And you see a couple plays later, maybe the next period, Dante Johnson gets around a block and all of a sudden kind of lays out Carlos Hyde a little bit. And nobody got up. Nobody got anybody's face. It was like, okay, you got me on that one and we'll go our separate ways. And I feel like I've just appreciated that competitive spirit.
Yeah, you mentioned Dante Johnson. I saw him have a really physical play. Was it on 7-on-7 or just individual?
7-on-7 in the red zone.
Against Burbridge.
Against Burbridge. And a sure touchdown.
And he, it was a very physical, a very strong rake, or, you know, just to strip him of the ball in the end zone. But that kind of caught my eye, that Dante Johnson, who I think the knock on him through his first three seasons with the 49ers has been kind of a, you know, kind of not really showing a great sense of urgency. I think he's doing a really good job of taking the opportunities he has playing opposite of Rashard Robinson and maybe kind of latching on to that starting cornerback job.
Yeah, let's talk about the corners, because Dante Johnson, the interception today of Brian Hoyer, I think it was Brian Hoyer's first of camp.
Yeah.
You have Rashard Robinson, and then you have in the nickel as well. Quan Williams had a great day today. He's battling against Will Redmond. You've got a couple of safeties who are out right now in Eric Reed, Jaquaski Tartan, Jimmy Ward, which gives an opportunity to guys like Vinny Sunseri, Don Jones, the undrafted guys, Lorenzo Jerome. And Chancellor James. Those are a couple of hot names right now in training camp. And so what do you make of the situation in the secondary?
Well, I think you take the three top safeties off of any team in the league, and they're going to struggle. So I think the 49ers have reason to feel good about the safety situation as it is, with Jimmy Ward, who will be back mid-August from the hamstring injury. Jimmy Ward and Eric Reed as your starting safeties, and in those particular roles, I think that's pretty good. And then you add Jaquaski Tartan as the third safety. I think 49ers have to feel good about those three guys. The cornerback situation is a little bit still iffy to me. I think Rashard Robinson has a chance to be a really good cover man at cornerback. But is he there yet? I don't know. Certainly his best football is ahead of him. Dante Johnson, Keith Reeser, those guys are even probably less of a sure thing than Robinson is, and I don't think Robinson's a sure thing either. A lot of talent. At the corner, at the nickel spot, I think obviously Kaywon Williams is somebody that Jeff Hafley, the DB's coach, really liked. They brought him over from the Browns, and we know that Will Redmond's a talented guy. To me, how those corners fare is going to be dependent almost entirely on the pass rush. The pass rush has to get better. The pass rush has to be able to take the heat off of those young cornerbacks. And from what I've seen, they have enough pieces at the pass rusher spots with, I mean, all these guys, Armstead, Buckner, Dumervil, Solomon Thomas, Aaron Lynch, perhaps coming off the sideline in a situational role. If that pass rush can perform, it's going to, I mean, those guys will be Rashard Robinson and Dante Johnson's best friends, because I think those guys need that kind of help, because we've seen in the past what happens when defenses have an opportunity to just, you know, when offenses have an opportunity to just pick a defense apart because of lack of pass rush.
And I think there's a lack of pass rush last year. There's also a lack of depth. Mm-hmm. The fact that DeForest Buckner never leaving the field, playing 1,000-plus snaps, Jeff Zganina, that's a mouthful, Jeff Zganina, defensive line coach, that won't happen this year. Absolutely not. It'll be a constant rotation of fresh bodies, and it appears that it's going to be a rotation of quality as well with the additions of Earl Mitchell, a guy on the inside. You have the versatility of throwing a guy like Eric Armstead at the Leo. Then you throw a guy like Ahmad Brooks or Aaron Lynch, a little bit more speed. Eli Harold, again, another name to watch. Can he progress throughout training camp? And it becomes a numbers game. Roster spots will be limited, but it at least feels like the 49ers have options at those positions, right? Trent Brown kind of alluded to it yesterday. You're going against a huge guy in Armstead or Buckner, and then all of a sudden, Elvis Dumervil, half the size of them and a whole lot faster, is coming at you. And so it does provide a challenge.
Yeah, it does. And you know, a guy like Quentin Dial, who has been a starter here and got a contract extension a couple years ago. Now, he's fighting for a role on this team at nose tackle. But, yeah, Dumervil comes in, 99 career sacks, and he's fighting for a spot. Aaron Lynch is, I think kind of things have clicked for him a little bit. But he's fighting for a spot. There are a lot more options. And, you know, one of the things that I think about this team, and I'm certainly not going to say the 49ers are going to the playoffs. They should be a vastly improved team from last year. And one of the reasons that I would say that is, you know, last year in particular, you know, you could go down the list at any position and say, oh, you know, this guy's struggling. They need to make a change there. But then you say, but he's still way better than the backup. So I think that, you know, this year they'll be cutting guys who last year would have been on the team and probably playing significant roles. And then just to, you know, to spin it off of that, I mean, look at the inside linebackers last year. You know, toward the end of the year, they were, you know, taking volunteers on the sideline. You know, who can play inside linebacker after Navarro Bowman went down? And this year, you know, there are more options with a Malcolm Smith joining the mix. And, of course, Navarro Bowman being healthy. You know, Reuben Foster has to earn his way. And I liked Ray Armstrong still around. I liked what Robert Saleh had to say about Reuben Foster.
Yeah.
He'll get his opportunity when he absolutely, absolutely deserves it. And so that's a key. These guys coming in, they have to earn their way on the field. Nothing's going to be given to them.
And I think that's – and there's also no rush, right? Again, I understand the fascination with first-round picks and rookies in general. You want to see them on the field as soon as possible. But Navarro Bowman, Malcolm Smith, Ray Armstrong was a fantastic player at the beginning of the season last year, one of the better players on the 49ers defense before he went down. They're not just going to lay down and let Reuben Foster take their job either, right? Brock Coyle's got experience in this system. And so it is a climb, and I do like Robert Saleh's approach, right? We understand how good these players are, but we're going to set the expectations that they're still rookies and they're not just going to be handed a job. And so I applaud Robert Saleh and Kyle Shanahan for their consistent approach in that sense.
Can I give you a history lesson?
Give me a history lesson. I love history.
So Patrick Willis, when he came in as a rookie, he was a backup for the first two preseason games. And then it became very obvious that Patrick Willis, whom everybody knew would be a starter at some point, and the guy in front of him was Brandon Moore, who had a pretty good year the year before and was a pretty good player. But Patrick Willis had to earn his way in, and he became the starter the third game of the exhibition season. A few years after that, Navarro Bowman was a third-round pick, and he didn't earn his spot until the next year. Tequio Spikes was a starter in front of him. And then when Bowman finally got on the field, his first year on the field, he was an all-pro player. So those are the two guys that I look at, the history of the 49ers, with Patrick Willis and with Navarro Bowman, and how they had to earn it, and it made them better because they earned it. And now Reuben Foster, who the 49ers say was the number three player on their draft board, he has to earn it. And when he does, I think that you'll see that he has earned it, and he'll be on the field for a reason.
All this tempering of expectations and hype and timelines and all that, you can still understand why the 49ers, why the fans are kind of licking their chops, this possibility of the Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman reincarnation with Bowman and Reuben Foster.
And I mean, the reason is simple. I mean, if 49er fans trust John Lynch and trust the personnel department and the coaching staff and how they constructed their draft board, think about what the 49ers did. They had the number two pick in this draft, and they, in essence, turned it into two of the top three players on their draft board. So we all know, you know, Myles Garrett was number one on their draft board, and it's also kind of neat that they were able to, they shared this later. They probably wouldn't have if they'd ended up with the second player on the draft board and the 30th player on the draft board. But they got Myles Garrett off the board. They trade back one spot, and they still get the number two guy on the draft board, Solomon Thomas. And then they trade up to get the number 31 overall pick, and they get Reuben Foster, the number three guy on their draft board, and the guy that they would have taken at number three if the Bears had taken Solomon Thomas.
There's so much to unpack there. One, the Seattle Seahawks trading out of pick 31 so the 49ers can get Reuben Foster, who will now see the Seahawks twice a year. That's interesting. Obviously, the whole situation surrounding the trade of the number two overall pick, and were the Bears bidding against themselves? Was there a third team involved? Getting another second-round pick for next year. And I think what's interesting to me is I remember Week 17 being in the press box, and you're watching the Browns-Steelers game. I'll never forget this. And the Browns had that game won 10 different times.
Yeah.
They had a pick six that they dropped at the one-yard line going into the end zone. No touchdown, it's turnover. Or fumble through the end zone, it's turnover. Mm-hmm. In overtime, they're at the one-yard line, first and goal from the inch. They go backwards three straight plays, kick a field goal. Pittsburgh scores a touchdown. Browns lose. They secure the number one pick. And so the whole time you're thinking, well, gosh, just what if? Gosh, how'd the Browns do? Gosh, what if? And now all of a sudden, you have Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster, and you're thinking, okay.
You know what? In 10 years, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's do this again.
Okay.
Maybe even before that.
I might be able to grow bearded by that point.
You might, yeah. So you will me in here, and we'll talk about what would have happened, what would have been better if the 49ers had had just Myles Garrett, because they probably wouldn't have traded out of number one, or the combination of Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster.
I look forward to that. I don't have any plans 10 years from now, so okay.
I'll put you down. Tuesday of camp?
Book it.
Let's do that. Okay.
Perfect. And we'll see you there as well. Matt, as we kind of close down here on 49ers Live, and we appreciate you guys joining us. Throughout the hype of 49ers camp, so good to have football back. Give me your impressions of Kyle Shanahan and a Kyle Shanahan-led team. Again, we know it's so early. All we've seen is an offseason program and just barely a week now of training camp. But you've heard from him plenty of times now after practice. So you've seen his demeanor from the good, from the bad, and then his on-field demeanor and presence as well.
My takeaway is it's a different era here with the 49ers, and it's very obvious. And Kyle is... you can tell. I asked him a question the other day about how that long touchdown pass to Marquise Goodwin. Take me through that. Why was that play successful? And he kind of got a smile on his face.
Yeah.
And he did this. And he did, this is what happened. And he seemed to be completely in his element talking about football.
Yeah.
And so when you see him coach, this guy has been around the sport his entire life. He knows what he's talking about. He's a football lifer. He enjoys the X's and O's. So there's kind of new openness around the 49ers. And the way I would tell you that I interpret it is that Kyle Shanahan is so confident in his message and his way of practicing and his way of constructing an offense and his way of enabling his defense to do all the things that he wants them to do, that he's going to say, you know what, let's pull back the curtain. I want the fan base. I want the media to see all the good things we're doing instead of keeping everybody in the dark. And then if things implode, we all can say, I mean, what is he doing? This is, you know, the plan isn't working. But I think he is so confident that he wants people to see this is the mindset, so we all, it, almost in real time, can go, well, man, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And as soon as we say, well, that makes a lot of sense, and we know that none of this stuff is going to be 100%,
yeah,
but the stuff that isn't 100%, it's kind of tough then to go back and second guess it when you heard the reasoning as it was happening and you go, oh, okay, that's why he's doing it. That makes all the sense in the world. So I appreciate the fact that he wants people to see he's not going to be giving away any state secrets. You know, he's not going to be divulging game plans. He's going to be very cognizant of competitive advantage, you know, gaining that edge once the season starts. But right now, I think that there's nothing wrong with him and John Lynch letting the public know that, you know, this team's in pretty good hands.
That's such a good point. And one, just the openness. I remember when John Lynch said that they met with DeShone Kizer at the combine, and they blew the door off the interview, and all of a sudden it was, wow, like headlines.
Yeah.
Get ready, type it out. And it's like, ultimately, what did he say? Absolutely nothing, right? Yeah. He wasn't going to say it a bad interview, right? So, but it's just, it's new and it's refreshing,
yeah,
here.
And you, I think you're referring, like, just giving it up that he's interviewed. You know, a lot of times at the combine, you know, teams will say, oh, you know, we can't tell you who we talked to.
Yeah.
Here, I'll give you a hint. They talk to everybody.
Yeah.
Every team talks to every player, by and large. And so for him to just offer up, oh, we talked to DeShone Kizer, and, oh, yeah, we're going to be talking to Mitchell Trubisky, we're going to be talking to Deshaun Watson, we're going to be talking to Patrick Mahomes and everybody else.
You're telling us what we already know, but just refreshing.
It's good to hear it from,
yep,
the general manager.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, Matt, last question. I'm curious to you, and I'll pose this to you, what constitutes a successful 2017 season?
You know, I don't think you put a win total on it. I think you'll know it when you see it. You know, sometimes, frankly, a 6-win season is a great season, and a team has a reason to move ahead and be thinking about this is a good stepping stone. To me, it's if they make an improvement this year with something that's sustainable. And I don't think, you know, the offensive philosophy last year was sustainable. But I think if they're moving forward, you see the young guys, you know, the defensive linemen that we talked about, if you see them progressing, if you see the building blocks, I think part of this year will be bringing excitement back.
Absolutely.
And you know, the first year of Bill Walsh, they weren't a good team. They weren't a good team at all. But you could see them kind of building, and you could see excitement coming back, and maybe, you know, they weren't a great team, but the offense was better. So I think it's tough to say, but I mean, if you're asking me how many wins would I expect from the 2017 49ers, I would think somewhere in that 4, 5, 6 range. You know, 4 being on the low end, 6 is they're definitely heading in the right direction. If they're below that, I think it's a major disappointment. If they're above that, I think it's like, wow, this program's rolling ahead of schedule. But I think what they're trying to do is kind of get people believing again, and I think rightfully so, that the product that they see at Levi Stadium and in their 8 road games this year is kind of the building block. And you want to jump on this train now, because next year they might really be good. And I think people, you know, I think what the 49ers would like to say is, you know, start watching this team grow now, because it's not going to be slowing down.
That was a professional segue, Matt Maiocco, because on Saturday you have the chance to come to Levi Stadium and see the product for yourself. Open practice right here at the home of the San Francisco 49ers. All it costs you is $5. And that money goes straight to the 49ers Foundation.
Is this
and
true? You, free food?
Free food.
Oh.
Free drinks. You'll see Matt Maiocco in his beard and his safari hat on the sideline taking vigorous notes throughout practice. But it should be a great time. Al Guido tweeted this morning, 22,000-plus tickets have already been sold, so make sure you're a part of that crowd.
Wow.
Who's going to be here at Levi's Stadium. It should be a lot of fun. And on in the same vein of what constitutes a great season is for me, I really want to see the young players on this team take a step forward. I want to see the Jimmy Wards, the Rashard Robinsons, the DeForest Buckners, the Eric Armsteads, your Fosters, Solomon Thomas, Joshua Garnett. I want to see these guys take a step forward and show that, okay, we are cornerstones of this franchise to where when you get to the offseason, okay, we know we're good at free safety. We're good on the defensive line. Joshua Gannett has solidified himself at left or right guard, right? So where you're not going into the offseason with nearly as many question marks, and you feel like you really have a strong understanding of your personnel.
And I think that what you hit on there is kind of the key. What players want, they want to be coached by coaches who get the most out of them. And so you don't, you know, I would suspect that everybody on offense is feeling pretty good about, I think Kyle, you know, pushing the buttons and the staff that he's accumulated on the offensive side, I think they're going to get the most out of me as a player. I would suspect that almost every offensive player feels that way. And so a coaching staff, you want to see as many players as possible kind of hit their peak or maximize their potential. So in a lot of ways, rather than a win-loss total, I think that's probably what you're looking at for this season, to see a greater number of players than what we've seen here in the last couple of years kind of get close to their potential. And with as many young players and as many new faces on this team, that would bode well for the future.
I couldn't agree more. And oh, time flies. That's the best 32 minutes of my day. Matt, we appreciate you joining us so much, man. And you're always good to us, and it's good to have you in studio, man.
It's my pleasure to be here. And you said the 49ers Foundation, that's $5 is going
to? That's where it's going, yeah.
That's, you know, the 49ers do a lot of good things. Foundation, I think, is probably at the top of their list as far as what the organization does. Very good charitable arm of this franchise.
Absolutely, and we appreciate you joining us as well. We'll be here each and every Wednesday throughout the month, recapping each week of training camp and as we dive into the preseason. Matt Maiocco, appreciate you joining us. For Matt, I'm Joe Fan. We'll see you next week right here on 49ers Live.